Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. The third section, concluding the third section with mantras 7 and 8. And for tomorrow, how many of you have now read mantras 7 and 8, be honest? A few more, okay. So if you can, find the time, try to read mantras 9, 10, and 11 for tomorrow, please. We only have 4 more days, including today, before the test. So tomorrow we'll do 9, 10, 11. Wednesday we'll do 12, 13, and 14. And then on Thursday we'll do 15, 16, 17, and 18. So today we're going to do 7 and 8. 7, let's read the verses, why not? 5 and 6. Where were we? No, yeah. 5 and 6. Describing the realization of the Mahabhagavat, the most advanced devotee, basically. Prabhupada does make mention, and we see here even in the purport to Mantra 7, Prabhupada says right at the beginning of the purport that, but for the Majjhima Adhikari and Uttama Adhikari discussed above, no one can correctly see the spiritual position of a living being. But we did make the point the other day that the Mahabhagavat, or Uttama Adhikari, has realized these things, and the Majjhima Adhikari is having some philosophical or sort of theoretical type of understanding. So there really is a big difference. There's a very big difference between the two. And on the whole, we see that Srila Prabhupada is definitely stressing more that how this applies to the Uttama Adhikari in terms of this being his reality or her reality. So 6 and 7 are explaining the realization of the self-realized soul in regards to the creation. All living entities, all things, he or she is seeing in relation to the Lord. Whereas Mantra 8 is describing that very advanced devotee's realization of Krishna. He knows Krishna in person in detail like this. So that is the difference, really. 6 is talking about how the Mahabhagavat is seeing everything and everyone in relation to the Lord, and the Lord as being within all those things and persons. Mantra 7 is explaining, taking a little further, and it's also a slightly different point, related point though, that in this way, the self-realized soul is seeing oneness, ekatvam, ekatvam, anupasyata. Self-realized soul is seeing oneness, not just a relationship. There's the living entities, and there's Krishna, and they're connected up. And not just that there's the living entities, and there's Krishna inside them, within their hearts, but Mantra 7 is saying that the self-realized soul is seeing oneness. So it's related, but also a slightly different point. And of course, the idea of oneness, spiritual oneness, is something we have to be rather careful about. Traditionally, in the Vedic history, there's been this ongoing conflict, really, between the personalists and the impersonalists. So here we are hearing ekatvam, oneness, anupasyata, that oneness is being seen. So obviously this is the type of verse which a personalist, or say which an impersonalist, would be very happy about. The previous verse, seeing things in relation, that means there's two. You can only have things being in relation when there's a minimum of two things. So the impersonalist wouldn't have been so happy about mantra 6, but mantra 7 the impersonalist would be very happy with, and vice versa for the personalists, at least superficially. But of course we have our philosophy of achintya bhed abhed tattva, everything being one and different. This philosophy is eternal. It's generally associated more with Lord Chaitanya. And actually the term, the very term, achintya bhed abhed tattva, was, sorry, thanks, created by Jiva Goswami. Anyone missing? Or anyone not marked themselves present? Oh, you did, okay. Everyone else has marked themselves present. And can someone mark Braj Bihari Prabhu present? Where were we? Oh yeah, Jiva Goswami. He actually coined the term achintya bhed abhed tattva. This is one contribution of Jiva Goswami to make it very specific and clear that this is our philosophy as Gaudiya Vaishnavas. But not just that it's our philosophy, but it is the philosophy. In Bhagavad Gita, of course, we know there are those verses in the 9th chapter. What is it? In chapter 9, verses 4 and 5. How does 4 go? Any of you Bhagavad Gita scholars know? Matajis, don't you know Bhagavad Gita by now? Not quite. Huh? You haven't got up to chapter 9. Anyway, I know 5 is Na Chat Matstani Bhutani Pasyame Yoga Maishwaram Bhutabrin Na Cha Bhutasto Mamatma Bhuta Bhavanaha. What's 4? How does it start? Mayati Tamidam Sarvam Jagadavyakta Muratina Matstani Sarvabhutani Na Chaham Teshvavastita. And can you read the translation of 4 first? Yeah, by me and my unmanifested form, the entire universe is pervaded. All beings are in me, but I'm not in them. And then 5, and what is it?
And yet everything
that is created does not rest in me. Behold my mystic opulence. What is it? Although I'm the maintainer of all living beings, and although I'm everywhere, still myself is the very source of creation. So this is achintya bhed abhed. This is a very clear case of achintya bhed abhed tattva, and this is like the essence of it. One and different. Krishna's here, but he's not here. He's in within, but he's outside, and he's not within like this. So that's Bhagavad Gita, and here we see in Sri Ishapanishad, which is very strict Vedic literature, that one and difference is there. 6 is difference. Everything is related. Krishna is within. So you can only be within something, really, which you are distinct from. Otherwise you would be it, rather than within it. And you can only see something in relation with something if that thing is in and of itself a distinct entity. So mantra 6 is more on the different side. Bhed abhed. Bhed means different from, and abhed means not different from. And mantra 7 very clearly is more on the not different from side. But in the purport, Srila Prabhupada is reconciling this concept of oneness with the concept of difference very nicely. At the top of page 33, Srila Prabhupada says it's actually the fourth line, the Mahabhagavat, the great devotee, sees oneness in the sense that he sees everything as the energy of the Supreme Lord. Since there is no difference between the energy and the energetic, there is the sense of oneness. Although heat and light from the analytical point of view are different from fire, there is no meaning to the word fire without heat and light. But in synthesis, heat, light, and fire are all the same. So this is the point, that we understand oneness in terms of like substance. We understand the term oneness here, ekatvam anupasyata, means that there's the energetic and the energy. In one sense, they're one. You cannot have a fire without heat and light. But and you may be experiencing the heat and light. So there's oneness and difference. As soon as you take away the fire, the heat and light are gone. But you're sitting at some distance from the fire, and there's no direct contact with the fire directly, but there is a contact in the sense of the energies. So it's one and different. And then again, and down in the next paragraph, Srila Prabhupada addresses this point, that there's also a oneness, not just in the sense of energy and energetic alone, but in sense of quality. Krishna, qualitatively, is spiritual. He's Satchit Ananda Vigraha, as Lord Brahma says. And we're also Satchit Ananda Vigraha. But he has a big Satchit Ananda Vigraha, infinite. And we have a small Satchit Ananda Vigraha, infinitesimal. Yeah. There's an infinite number of us, and we're all within him. And there's more of him still than just the space that we take up within him, so to speak. So qualitatively, I'm sure we're all very familiar with these points. Qualitatively, we are one. Prabhupada gives the example of, he gives numerous examples at different times. He's given the example of gold in the gold mine and the gold in a ring. Very clear-cut example. Here he gives the example of the salt in salt water. The salt in one drop and the salt in the whole ocean. Qualitatively, I hope no one's going to hurt themselves. Qualitatively, the salt in the drop and the salt in the complete ocean, obviously they're precisely the same thing. They're actually the same thing. But quantitatively, obviously, there's practically an unlimited difference. So in this way, we are understanding some oneness and difference, but the point in this verse is to more focus on the oneness. So how does Srila Prabhupada focus more on the oneness and explore this aspect of how we are one and how it manifests, not just like in theoretical terms, but in terms of practical action and in our lives and in the totality of the universe? How does this oneness, how do we see this oneness? Do we go and test Krishna's body and then test our body and see, right, all Satchit Ananda. So there's oneness in quality. Not like that. Srila Prabhupada, in a very interesting way, brings out this point of oneness. It's more at the top of page 34. Having established that we're not equal, at the bottom of 33 says that therefore, ekatvam does not mean that a living being is equal in all respects to the Supreme Lord. It does, however, indicate that in a broader sense, there is one interest. Just as in a family, the interest of all members is one, or in a nation, The national interest is one, although there are many different individual citizens. This is a very nice point. There is oneness in this sense, and this is more how it manifests, you know, on a very practical level, the oneness. Not just in the sense of attempting some sort of chemical analysis of Krishna's body and then a chemical analysis of our spiritual body. That's not very practical. But this is very practical and, so to speak, down to earth. Actually, it's not down to earth. It's completely on the transcendental platform. One interest. Oneness is achieved like that. When we accept the interests of Krishna as our interest and as our only interest, as Lord Chaitanya says, na danam, na janam, na sundaram, kavatam vajigarisha kame, mama janmani, janmanishvare, bhavatad bhaktir, ahoitaki twai. I don't want anything, material, wealth, women, fame, all the various so-called desirable things of this world, I don't want them. I only want one thing, and that is devotional service. Even birth after birth, nothing else. Not even liberation. So Lord Chaitanya has explained there very nicely this idea of this oneness of interest. There's one translation you may have seen of that, of the Guru Puja song we sing every day, Sri Guru Charana Padma. And where does it come? I forget exactly which line he's translating, but it says, make the desire of the spiritual master one with your heart. This is the idea. On the sadhana level particularly, that, you know, we may not know exactly what Krishna wants us to do today, Monday, what Krishna personally wants us to do, but we may know what the spiritual master wants us to do at this very minute. So, therefore, Narottam Das Thakur is saying, this is how we develop this concept of oneness. Make the desire of the spiritual master one with your heart. And nothing else, nothing else. That's all. That's all. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in discussing this very point, makes an extremely interesting point. It's very, very interesting. He says that by adopting the interests of Krishna as your own interests, you may become so one with Krishna that you become even more than one. It's a little inconceivable. But the idea is that, like, for example, Lord Chaitanya, he's God, and he wanted his followers to preach and make everyone devotees like this, and to convert people from being non-devotees and make them into devotees. But then when Jagai and Madhai came and attacked Lord Nityananda, then Lord Chaitanya wanted to kill them. As far as he was concerned, the preaching idea of making the non-devotees devotees, he didn't want to apply it to Jagai and Madhai. He wanted to exclude them. Although his desire is that this preaching be done and that people become devotees. But then Lord Nityananda, he came and appealed on behalf of Jagai and Madhai that please accept them, and on the basis of his appeal, Lord Chaitanya did accept them, and they became great devotees. So, Lord Chaitanya had a desire, and Lord Nityananda became one with the Lord in terms of accepting that desire as his desire, but he actually accepted it even more than the Lord accepted it, even though it's the Lord's desire. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, even though this is somewhat inconceivable, I mean, there are many parts of our philosophy where if you take it far enough, you end up getting into inconceivable territory. And this is one of them. But the Bhaktivinoda Thakur makes the point that in this way the devotee may become so much one with the Lord that he becomes even more than one with the Lord. So this is, if we want to talk about ekatvam, just becoming one in a very general sense, this is more than becoming one in the impersonal sense, where you just become one and you are not different from that which you became one with, Brahman. But in this sense, you more effectively and more completely become one. So I thought that was a very, very nice point. And it's a very important point. Then Srila Prabhupada, he talks in the verse itself, says that such a person who's on this level of oneness, that he has no illusion and no anxiety. So combined with the description given in Mantra 6 of seeing everything in relation to the Lord, like some demon comes to attack you. Or we mentioned how Srila Prabhupada, during that bomb scare, that air raid in Bombay, Srila Prabhupada said that if the devotee sees the bomb is falling on his head, he says, oh, here comes Krishna coming to take me to him. So he doesn't think, wow, here comes a bomb, it's a disaster. It's in panic, something like that. So there's no anxiety. He doesn't hate the situation. That, you know, what a nuisance, a bomb dropping on my head. He doesn't hate us. He's not in illusion thinking that it's just these nonsense Pakistanis, they're so aggressive. No, he understands, actually it's Krishna. Krishna's behind this situation. So he doesn't hate the situation, doesn't get into anxiety about it. No, not in illusion about it, but he's always blissful, whatever happens. One devotee was telling me, he was sent when Prabhupada, when they were trying to build the temple in Juhu, Bombay, or trying to get permission, that there were two devotees. They were going every day to approach the different departments in the city council to try and get permission for the, you know, the from the engineers and the water department, and it was a whole big thing. But anyone who's been in India for a while knows how the bureaucracy works here. And the devotees were finding it most exceedingly difficult to get permissions. So they'd been going to see one man like for a week every day, and he was never there and he was never cooperative. And finally they met him and he refused. And they were fried. And they went back, and they arrived back in the evening, during the evening arati, and Prabhupada was there, and he saw them standing at the side, sort of feeling downhearted. The kirtan was going on, but they were just standing there. And Prabhupada didn't ask them anything, but he, during the class, immediately afterwards, Prabhupada said, even if the city officials do not give you permission, still you must dance in kirtan. Yeah. So for a very advanced devotee like Srila Prabhupada, even though sometimes he would get angry, but he was always blissful, actually. So this is Mahabhagavat, very, very elevated. And oneness, knowing that Krishna is there, this is not something independent of Krishna, is a very important part. But then, as far as illusion and anxiety are concerned, Srila Prabhupada gives an interesting little explanation on page 35, the second paragraph there, several lines from the top. Prabhupada says, a godless civilization arises from maya, or illusion. And the result of such a civilization is lamentation. So that's a very nice explanation. If you get onto the material platform, means you're putting yourself in illusion. And if you, when you act in illusion, what could the result be other than misfortune and so on, ending in lamentation? It's just inevitable. It's simply inevitable. So the more we're Krishna conscious, and I mean Mahabhagavat is one thing, but at least as, you know, Madhyam Adhikaris or aspiring Madhyam Adhikaris or whatever, Srila Prabhupada definitely wanted us to be Madhyam Adhikaris. I mean, in terms of on a functional level in ISKCON. So as such, philosophically we should be convinced enough that we don't get into Maya. And then if we don't get into Maya and we're really enthusiastic and staunch in our Krishna consciousness, then also for us, even though we'll face difficulty, but we're not going to become bewildered and confused and, you know, lose our standing, our position in devotional service. So Prabhupada continues on in that same paragraph that, as stated in Bhagavad Gita 7.14, no one but those who surrender at the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord can surpass the stringent laws of nature. Thus, if we wish to get rid of all sorts of illusion and anxiety and create unity out of all diverse interests, we must bring God into all our activities. So Prabhupada also used, I don't know if he coined the term, but he used the term, unity in diversity. We're all different individuals, so that's like the most diverse level you can get onto. But we're all within Krishna consciousness, and we're all together as one family. Then there are different departments of activities and so on within ISKCON. But it's all meant to work cohesively as one unit, but also that personal spirit. Diversity obviously indicates personalism. So Krishna consciousness is meant to be personal. The most personal thing. But within the unity of Krishna consciousness, then happiness can be there. So this is the idea pretty much in Mantra 7. And then Mantra 8, the speaker is now describing the actual perception of God by this great devotee, very elevated soul. As we said, 6 and 7, they're more how the devotee is seeing or relating with other things on the basis of the connection or the oneness with Krishna. But now, how he perceives Krishna in person. So there's a number of points that the very elevated devotee knows the Supreme Lord as the greatest, as an unembodied being, unembodied, it's an interesting term, means he's not within a body. Doesn't mean he doesn't have a body, but it means he's not in the body. Anyway, we'll get to that shortly. Omniscient, he knows everything. Beyond reproach, can't be criticized, or there's nothing wrong with him. He's perfect. Without veins, pure, uncontaminated, self-sufficient philosopher who's been fulfilling everyone's desires. So there's several points there. And in Prabhupada he talks about them all pretty much, but not in order. He starts off talking about from the bottom of page 37 over to the top of page 38, talks about how he's unembodied. He's unembodied means, Prabhupada actually explains, starting in the fifth line on page 38, he's unembodied, which means that there's no difference between his body and soul. So he's not embodied. Oh, and it also says there he doesn't have veins. In fact, that's the first point, isn't it? That he doesn't have veins. Oh no, embodied is the first point. And Prabhupada is connecting up his not having veins with that. then, well, he's not formless. I guess that's form or formlessness is not so much discussed directly in the verse itself. But down in the second paragraph on page 38, Prabhupada talks about how Krishna is sometimes described as being formless, but it means that he doesn't have a form like ours, with veins and everything. He has a transcendental form. Then his being omniscient is discussed at the bottom of page 38. To the top of page 39, he's omniscient, all-knowing, and omnipotent. Then Srila Prabhupada, in order to elaborate about Krishna's omniscience, actually dedicates pretty much the whole of page 39 to discussing omniscience and omnipotence. Talks about the deity. The Lord can expand himself. He can expand himself. Even though he's in Goloka, he expands himself as the deity. So he's omnipotent. He can also transform matter into spirit, and even spirit into matter. There's one conversation in which one devotee asks Srila Prabhupada that Prabhupada in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that the soul is deathless and eternal and like that. But is it possible for Krishna to kill the soul? You know, wipe a soul out of existence? Bit of a silly question, really. And Srila Prabhupada said, yes. But Krishna doesn't do that. He won't do that. But if he wants to, he can. He can if he wants to. So Prabhupada is stressing quite considerably about deity worship, realizing the Lord and approaching the Lord through the deity form, how we should be very careful to appreciate that the deity is directly the Lord and not just a representation. It's actually the Lord in person. He is actually the Lord in person. Of course, there's so many stories about that. I'm sure you know the story of Sakshi Gopal from Chaitanya Charitamrita. Gopal who came as a witness. There's a nice story about Goridas Pandit. I'm sure many of you would have heard. Goridas Pandit, he had the first Gaur-Nitai deities that were made. While Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda were still present on the planet, these deities were made. And apparently they looked very much like the Lord's. And one day Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda visited Goridas Pandit, and they talked with him for a while, and the deities were there. But then the Lord's eventually said, well, we have to go. And Goridas, they got up to go, but Goridas jumped in front of the door. You're not going. I want you to stay. And they're trying to reason with him that, but we have to go, and, you know, we have to, we have things to do. But no, I want you to stay. Very fiercely attached to the Lord. So then the deities on the altar got off the altar and said, all right, let the two of them stay, and we'll go. So then Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, who were visiting, they got up on the altar, and they stood there, okay, we'll stay. And the deities made towards the door. But then Goridas, getting a bit flustered, he stopped them. No! Get back there! So they got back on the altar, and they were getting on and off the altar. In the end, Goridas Pandit lost track. Who were the deities, and who were the forms who had come to visit? But in the end, one Lord Chaitanya left, and one Lord Nityananda left. And one of each stayed. So the thing is that actually they're the same. Actually they're the same. Even sometimes devotees in our ISKCON temples have told me, I don't know if they're just being facetious, pujaris, they say that, you know, they dress the deities every day, they have many outfits for the deities. And they say in some temples, I remember the pujaris in Bhaktivedanta Manor, where there's Radha Gokulananda, they told me after Radha Gokulananda had been installed for 10 years or 15 years, sometime, they said, you know, the deities have put on weight. Some of the outfits don't fit around the waist any longer. So anyway, I don't know exactly how to take that. But in principle, it's possible. We mentioned the other day how Prabhupada was perceiving the deities dancing on the altar. So the Mahabhagavat, great elevated soul, self-realized soul. Of course, there are also Mahabhagavats and Mahabhagavats. Srimati Radharani is also a Mahabhagavat. But just if you, so to speak, happen to be a Mahabhagavat, doesn't mean you're on the level of Srimati Radharani. So there are Mahabhagavats and Mahabhagavats, but definitely there are certain Mahabhagavats who can and sometimes do, or perhaps always do, depends, actually see these things directly. So here, of course, the verse is talking about this realization, this perception that the very elevated devotee has. He's seeing it. He's not just, you know, understanding, oh yes, right, the Lord is like this, that's right. But he's actually seeing it, sometimes at least. So, in this respect, the worship of the deity is very important, because we are not Mahabhagavats, but worshipping the deity is one of the very, very important ways of developing this personal relationship with the Lord. Then, let's see. Over on page 40, the second paragraph particularly, Prabhupada is explaining all about supplying. That was mentioned in the verse, how the Lord has been supplying since time immemorial. So Prabhupada explains, and he explains in an interesting way, that you will get supplied as you deserve. But then there's another element, and this applies more to the devotees, and that is that you may be qualified, but if the Lord doesn't give you mercy, then you may not get, say, as much as you could get. Not that the Lord will cheat you, but you can get extra, you can get some, there's special things available through mercy. You'll get what you deserve in a simple sense. But you can also get mercy, and that, you know, that's special. And Prabhupada gives the example of that there may be many people, lawyers, who are qualified technically to be high court judges. If you gave them the opportunity, they could do the job. But they're not all high court judges. There's only a few who get chosen. And there are special considerations about their being chosen. There's special, some special connections, some special way that they go about doing their, performing their activity, which makes them a little more prominent, and then they get chosen like this. So Prabhupada is exploring that point there. And then Prabhupada goes on bottom of page 40 over the top of page 41, that people, Krishna is supplying, and it's one thing to get some special mercy, but it's another thing when people desire the wrong thing. So they get all these stupid things coming that just entangle them and make their lives more difficult. But they ask for them. So it's a rather unfortunate situation. So even Srila Prabhupada definitely made the point about devotees that we should be careful what we desire. Because if you desire it, particularly if you're a devotee, means there's a closer connection with Krishna. And if you desire something, then you'll get it. Or at least you're more likely to get it. So you should watch out what you desire. I had a funny experience the other day. It really brought this point home to me a bit. That where I'm staying, the monkey, of course the monkeys come everywhere, and the monkeys jump around in the trees, and I was not exactly admiring, but noting how agile they are. And they jump from one branch to another, and I was thinking, gosh, what would happen if they jumped onto a branch, but it was, you know, rotten or something, and then suddenly in space, in mid-air, it just falls away, and there they are, and they come crashing to the ground. And there we were at Russostalie on Saturday, and it happened. And anyway, I don't know. I don't think Krishna was necessarily trying to just demonstrate something for me. I certainly wouldn't presume that. But it just made me think that, you know, it was really pretty silly to have gotten to this whole meditation about how the monkeys are jumping and, you know, different considerations in jumping from branch to branch. Because, you know, I probably spent 5 minutes thinking about it. Then Krishna had to perhaps demonstrate. So we should be careful what we desire. Prabhupada told the story, probably you're familiar with it, of that one lady, she would go into the forest every day and collect firewood and sell it. And one day she went further in and got more, and she was coming out, but it got later, and it was heavy, and it got dark, and she tripped and dropped the firewood. And it was dark, and she was thinking, oh no, what am I going to do? And then she called out, oh, Krishna, help! And Krishna appeared and said, what would you like? And she said, could you pick the pile of wood up and put it back on my head again? Anyway, there are many stories like that. So we should... If we just desire the right things, and Krishna will help us, if he sees we're actually going in the right direction, he'll help us and encourage us. And then we can make great progress. Then in the last paragraph on page 41, Prabhupada talks about greatness. If we were God, if this ekatvam, this oneness idea, was to be taken like in a very complete sense, that we're one in all respects, then why would we have to pray to God? We wouldn't have to pray to God because we would be God, actually. And so the fact that we are beggars and praying to God shows that we're not one in that sense. If we were one in that sense, how could we end up in the position of being beggars? Why would we need to be? So it doesn't make sense at all. But we are in that position because Krishna is the greatest, and we are very small. Then over on page 42, Prabhupada talks about self-sufficiency. Top of the page, in a very interesting, but Prabhupada, you know, at the same time as being highly philosophical and most astute in a philosophical sense, makes it an extremely amusing point. Talking about how Krishna did so many things when he was here 5,000 years ago to show how he's self-sufficient. He doesn't need any help. So he says, Prabhupada says, in his childhood, he killed many powerful demons, and there is no question of his having acquired such power through any extraneous endeavor. He lifted Govardhan Hill without even practicing weightlifting. I thought that was rather good. So he's self-sufficient. What a nice way to express that. And then being beyond reproach, that you can't criticize him. There is no fault. There is no fault. Prabhupada says, says he danced with the gopis without social restriction and without reproach. Although the gopis approached him with feelings of amorous love, the relationship between the gopis and Lord Krishna has been worshipped even by Lord Chaitanya, who was a strict sannyasi and rigid follower of disciplinary regulations. So that we know. Lord Chaitanya was extremely strict. The example of the banishing of Junior Haridas is there. But he worshipped the gopis, and he was always absorbed in remembering their relationships with Krishna. Then for the rest of the whole paragraph, Prabhupada is talking about how Krishna is pure and purifying. Prabhupada uses the words, in Sanskrit there's shuddham, which means antiseptic, and apapa vidham means prophylactic. I'm sure you all know what prophylactic means. It means that Prabhupada says the word prophylactic refers to the power of his association. A devotee, as mentioned in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 9, verses 13 and 31, a devotee may appear to be sudur achar, not well behaved in the beginning, but he should be accepted as pure because he's on the right path. This is due to the prophylactic nature of the Lord's association. Means he purifies. He is pure. You cannot contaminate him if you try. If you try and throw some dirt at him, it won't work. And he's so pure that he has a potency to purify those that come in contact with him. Prabhupada gave the example actually of a person falling in some dirty water. They get dirty. Then the sun also has contact with the dirty water in the sense of through its rays. But the sun does not become contaminated, but rather the dirty water becomes purified by the association of the sun. So it's like that. Krishna is not only so pure that if you try to contaminate him, you won't find a way how to do it. But he's also purifying, that even if you're very sinful, sudur achar, but he can still purify you and bring you to the platform of yourself being completely pure. So in these ways, Srila Prabhupada explains the realization of Krishna that this great devotee, these great devotees have. Any comments or questions?
Be careful about what we desire. And especially here in Vrindavan, it seems, at least for me, a little difficult because the mind is so quick. And could you say something regarding that?
Well, yes. If you don't learn by hearing, that you should be careful about what you desire, you should control your mind and not let your mind just go off on its little trips, then you'll find out the hard way, because some of those things will come true and it'll come back on you and it'll hurt. One of the great methods of curing people of bad habits is punishment. Yeah. So if you don't learn by hearing, you may have to be punished. And Vrindavan is like that. It's like that. That if you're not on your toes, it catches up with you very quickly. And it's Krishna's mercy. And then you realize, wow, that was because of this. And my gosh, I better not do it again. Something like that. So it's a highly... Everything is kind of escalated. The purification is escalated if you're very serious. And if you feel you want to space out, then, the reaction is pretty severe.
First of all, can we ask questions for the previous as possible?
Okay.
This is regarding the body of a pure devotee. You were talking about the body of a pure devotee, how is transcendental, and nice description. And then you were speaking about how he's receiving the sin of the misbehavior of his disciples.
Right.
And please forgive me to ask this question, but I was thinking that Prabhupada, when he came to the West, he had two heart attacks on his way. So I doubt Prabhupada's body is present at all, because fully engaged in devotional service.
Yeah.
But, it's not in the one's sin, he had two heart attacks.
You know, this is a bit inconceivable. Of course, he already had at least one disciple. Already. Yes. Well, you know, Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains, I think it's in Harinam Chintamani, that just one nonsense disciple, he's talking about how a spiritual master or person who has that service may possibly fall down. And he says the worst thing is accepting unqualified disciples. And he says, if you have just one who's actually a cheater, I mean, everyone neophyte devotee is not really a cheater, but mixed. That's why they need to be initiated and guided, because they're, you know, somewhat on the mundane platform, and even, you know, fairly significantly on the mundane platform in many ways. But he says, if a spiritual master accepts even just one who's actually a cheating rascal and who's not sincere, but somehow or other he gets initiated, then just that one can be enough for the spiritual master to fall down. So therefore, you know, we in ISKCON, I mean, as Vaishnava institutions go, we apply much more rigorous standards than you'll find in other places. 16 rounds, following all the regulative principles. These standards are not applied, as far as I'm aware, outside of ISKCON. Yeah, there has to be some test like that. Anyway, I would say that, see, the thing is that great elevated devotee, Krishna may allow certain things to happen also to show people. There are many ways you could look on the subject matter that you're referring to, but one of them is that, like Prahlad. Why was Prahlad harassed so viciously? He didn't have any disciples, and you know, he was on, certainly on the topmost level of pure devotional service. But at least one way of looking at it is that the Lord wanted to make this certain points through the pastime of Lord Nrisimhadev and Prahlad Maharaj. So he allowed these things to happen. That's one way of looking at it. As I say, there are many ways one could explore the whole subject. But in the case of Srila Prabhupada, you know, the fact that Srila Prabhupada carried on despite that, and then again having another heart attack a year or two later, a stroke, you know, it means a type of a heart attack. So, but he still carried on with his preaching. I mean, this is one way of looking at it. Prabhupada is showing, and Krishna is showing through Prabhupada, the extreme dedication and determination of a pure devotee. So, some food for thought, but I think we have to end here. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.